This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Wednesday to all of you. Nice to be with you. Hope you're having a great morning here at 6 a.m. We are up for you. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne.
We just had another bad transcript moment.
Yeah, Seth brought in.
Going to show up in the transcripts. And
Seth brought in two giant grapefruits today.
Elite
held them next to his crotch.
How big these grapefruit were.
That you were holding in your lap.
So the defendant put them in his lap and said, these grapefruit? At least started it.
I like that you're preparing yourself for the ultimate trial here by calling yourself the defendant.
It's turned into a little game I play, right? Where things that when I walk around through the day and I do things that might be misinterpreted or whatever, I imagine what it's going to look like in the transcripts, and then I try to defend myself.
It's a good exercise. Yeah. It's very preemptive. It's very visionary.
I walk in with a defense all the time.
Yeah. I don't think Elie goes into that other studio there and starts jotting down notes.
Elie started that one.
She did. Yeah. I'll go down with the ship with you on the grapefruit one here. So we welcome you all.
And for the record, they are large grapefruits.
They're huge grapefruits. Yeah. Yeah. They're a metaphor for something.
Grapefruits are awesome. They fill you up. Low glycemic index.
They help the digestive tract as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we welcome you in on a Wednesday, Sean Pendergast and Seth Payne. And yesterday was a
compare tumor sizes. To.
yesterday was an interesting day around town, mostly because the news stories of the day had a lot to do with upper management.
Upper
management.
It's an exciting.
Baby.
What a day! Had reports of the first. Well, let's see. Let's in succession. Dusty Baker was reported by Bob Nightingale to be the choice of the Astros as the next manager. It's not so clear that that's actually true.
Bob Nightingale didn't just report that Dusty Baker was going to be the manager. He wrote a column that was basically a wedding toast to Dusty Baker about how awesome he is.
The other game I like to play is Guess the Source.
Yeah, we'll do that later.
Boy, if I were to guess the source on this one, I don't know who was speaking so glowingly about Dusty Baker and had knowledge that the Astros had chosen him. Either Dusty Baker or his wife, I suppose. I don't know.
Right.
Somebody close to Dusty Baker was a source on this one.
We'll Zapruder that story a little bit later. But you're right. That was the first. And by the way, just to level set, because there are probably people walking around thinking that there's going to be a press conference for Dusty Baker at some point in the next 24 to 48 hours. That deal is not done yet. They are still working with Dusty Baker. The Astros have made no final decision on who the manager of the team is going to be. So I guess the gist of that story is that maybe Dusty Baker is one of the leaders in the clubhouse, maybe the leader in the clubhouse at this point.
Yeah.
But he is not the manager of the Houston Astros.
Right. And as I was trying to gauge the reaction yesterday, I think a lot of people are excited because on the human side of things, Dusty Baker feels like the guiding hand that you want on a team that's probably going to have continued controversy, continued scrutiny for sure. And all those human side of the things, he seems to check off a lot of boxes if the Astros do eventually indeed hire him. On the opposite side is all the people that were skeptical of a guy that doesn't have a great reputation for really embracing the analytics. Not to be ageist, but he is 70 years old and he is very old school baseball. You know, Brent Strom has embraced the analytics. He's about the same age as Dusty Baker. So it's not like it can't be done. But that's where people, you check in with people at various stops, the other four teams that Dusty Baker has been the manager of, and you hear resoundingly, he's not going to be into what the math nerds are telling him.
Yeah, I think my main criteria for this managerial hire, Seth, because I think whoever it is going to be embracing the analytics, whether they like it or not.
Yeah.
Because of and I think more and more old school managers do, because it's what a lot of them have been doing anyways, couched a little differently.
Right. Well, we've already gone over, you know, with the Nationals when Dusty Baker was there those two seasons, they were middle of the road in defensive shifts.
Yes.
So I feel like that's a pretty good gauge for is your organization using analytics. It's not like Dusty Baker was out there saying, nope, the shortstop stays where he is.
Going with a gut feel, man. Going with a gut feel. So my main criteria was just bring in somebody who is a player's manager, who's not going to upset the apple cart in terms of chemistry in the clubhouse. And by everything that I've read and people I've texted with and talked to that have either covered or rooted for a team that Dusty Baker managed, they all seem to be cool with that aspect of it. So Dusty is truly in a situation where it's more about don't screw it up than it is something he's going to need to bring to the table. That's number one.
Uno.
The other story from an upper management standpoint is actually in some ways a bit of a non-story. It's more affirmation of what we all knew already, but it got everybody a lot more heated than Dusty Baker being the Astros manager. And that was the statement from the Houston Texans from Cal McNair, CEO, the owner of the team, basically, he and his mom, Janice. The statement essentially applying the title of what we already knew to both Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby. Bill O'Brien now has the general manager title to go along with head coach. Jack Easterby will be the executive vice president of football operations. The statement reads as follows. Preparations are underway for the 2020 season. I thought it was important to update titles, roles, and responsibilities for Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby so they more accurately reflect the way we've been operating for the past 8 months. I was encouraged by the progress that our team made on the field this year, which was due in part to our new structure, operating approach, and the leaders within our football operations group. I'm proud that we provided our fans with many thrilling victories at home, including a playoff win, and we delivered another double-digit win season. Our fans deserve that, but now it is time for the organization to get back to work toward our pursuit of a world championship for the city of Houston. Seth, what was your initial reaction when you saw this news?
My initial reaction was, oh, okay, so they're definitely not getting Nick Caserio. Unless Caserio is so dead set on getting the hell out of New England. And we'll see what happens with the quarterback. And
he'll have six other places he can go.
He could go and be a general manager, unless he doesn't want to be a general manager. Oh, but Jack Easterby is also now, and there's the other notable promotion or... Yeah. I guess job title change.
Executive VP of football ops.
Executive VP of football ops. Right. So I feel like that would have been what Caserio would come and do.
It's a great point.
If he wasn't named the GM, that would be the higher up position. So I don't think there's really room for Caserio. And maybe the last time that Caserio and Easterby will ever have had a moment was at the ring ceremony last year, where they probably, you know, delicately touched each other on the shoulders and looked into each other's eyes and thought, hey,
that whole thing seems even weirder.
Our whole future is in front of us. Oh, wait a second. Bob Kraft just saw us. Scat. Scat.
Yes.
Get out. Scatter. That's scatter. Right. That's right. That would be the, whatever their code word was.
Yeah.
Or safe word, whatever you want to call it.
It's really interesting because for quite a bit of the season, off season, there have been people going, well, I just want to hear Bill O'Brien's the general manager. Stop being so coy, O'Brien. We want to hear that you're the general manager. Then the team puts out a statement that gives Bill O'Brien the title general manager. Well, and everybody's like, I can't believe that you promoted Bill O'Brien.
Well, me, oh my, I'm just one of many. Apparently the committee got together and decided that little old me was going to be the general manager.
I'm as surprised as anybody.
What a grand designation. Ah, I can't tell you. It caught me quite by surprise. I didn't expect to be honored thusly.
Thusly.
Pit-a-pat goes my little heart, my wee little heart.
Well, we can't have Southern Belle O'Brien will not stand anymore.
Southern Belle O'Brien is the queen of the county.
Yeah. So I will say this. There were a lot of people who were angry with the announcement, but at least we've got a degree of clarity now.
We have clarity. We also have confirmation that O'Brien was... perhaps not being completely forthright on the way things were operating.
Oh, you mean the audio we're going to play in the next segment?
I've been listening for 6-7 months. Listen. Everybody's just going to have to get used to it. This is a different scenario. Yeah. Different than anything else in the NFL.
Right.
Woo!
Right.
It's crazy. Oh, actually, no. It's just pretty much you've been operating as a
GM. Did you just jazz hands the
jazz hands? That's the other good thing Bill O'Brien's going to do. Now that he's not Southern Bell, he's going to be jazz hands Bill.
A lot of jazz hands. All right, so we're
all... Everybody gather around because I got a story.
Nobody beats
here's
the
what we're going to do. We're going to sign up Whitney, sign up Tunsil, and then we're going to give it to Sean a pile of goo. That's what we call money, you see, here in River City.
So Bill O'Brien now has the title of general manager to go along with head coach and the more invisible titles of play caller, decision maker.
Yeah, which I guess for now, until Chris Olsen gets a replacement, he's the chief salary.
Yeah, we just had somebody ask us that on the text page. Does this mean he's officially the salary cap guy as well since they fired Olsen? I would imagine they're going to find somebody to fill that role.
That's too labor-intensive a job.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something that even traditional GMs, they have the salary cap guy slash contract negotiator, right? Because that's like it's kind of like having your accountant. You're a really good business person, but you need an accountant
Absolutely.
On your side, and that's what you have that person for. So, Brandy asked the relevant question immediately. I'm kind of shocked by how quickly she asked it. So she said, "Well, is he going to get a pay raise too?"
Yeah, I wonder.
Because he's the GM now? Is that how the way it works? Does he get a Bill Belichick salary?
God, can you imagine? What does Belichick make, about $12 million a year?
I think about $12
million. Yeah, yeah.
Which is a relative bargain if you think about it. Coaches' salaries
hell yeah,
are really
it is.
it's the
glitch in the matrix, right? I mean, that's the one area you can overspend. It's not administered by the league or a CBA.
But that's what's so amazing about it is that owners don't generally overspend for coaches.
Yeah.
They don't have a salary cap for coaches, but they all seem to abide by one.
I wonder if that changes with a guy like Dave Tepper in Carolina, you know, paying almost $10 million a year for Matt Rhule.
That's true. You know, Rhule hasn't earned that, right?
Yeah,
so to speak.
Here come these guys who are these hedge fund guys who see these things that maybe other owners who aren't as experienced in crunching numbers and seeing things that others don't see, that it's automatically going to drive up the market for it. You know what I mean?
The other thing, too, is that he also hasn't been in the business long enough to realize, oh, all right, well, wait a second. This is a business after all, and we do want to make money on this thing.
Tepper?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see. Here's Bill O'Brien. Bill O'Brien asked the Monday after the season ended for the Texans. So this is January 13th. So this is a little over 2 weeks ago. And this answer, look, we could have gone and put a medley together of this answer when he was asked about it throughout the regular season and the preseason about his role in the organization. John McClain asked this question. John will be in with us in the 8 o'clock hour, by the way. John asked him the question, is it going to help you this coming offseason that you are the man in charge from the get-go this offseason?
I think that relative to like being in charge, again, I think there's a lot of people that help. I just really want to try to do the best I can to make that clear. I mean, there are a lot of people, whether it's the coordinators or Jack Easterby or Matt Bazergan or whoever, that are involved with decision making. And so it's definitely a consensus. You know, we try to build a consensus. You know, that's one thing that Bob talked about a lot, Bob McNair. That's one thing that Cal talks a lot about, is we try to build a consensus. That's what we try to do. And I think that starts today, you know, with some of the information that we'll get today, and then we'll move forward with that.
That may very well be true. That may be the management style behind the scenes, building a consensus. This is what won't stand anymore, is Bill O'Brien, he is the lightning rod now. You get the title of general manager, and heavy is the head that wears the crown. When you get asked questions that are personnel-related questions, general manager-related questions, it's going to be awfully hard for him, Seth, even on a Monday press conference after a game, that if there's something significant going on the personnel side, he can't duck those questions.
Right, right. And now he can demur. He can just say, well, we don't answer this. Because he was asked a personnel question during the season, and he didn't say, well, that's not my decision. He said, I wouldn't comment on a personnel issue like that. And by the way, a reader or a listener, thank you, points out, and it's in the original Chronicle article, that neither O'Brien nor Easterby received a contract extension or a raise.
Okay.
So
they just got the title.
So thank you.
So this
thank
is
you,
truly,
listener, who's doing a better job at my job than I am.
truly a clarification situation by the Texans yesterday.
Yeah, so I think that he doesn't... He already speaks to the media a lot without necessarily telling us a whole lot.
Yes.
So I don't think any of that changes. It's other than you have clarity. You know what it is? For the most part, all this does is it helps me feel better about, in the back of my mind, not saying like, well, wait a second, what if we all have this wrong and he's not actually the acting general manager?
That's right.
This confirms what we've all pretty much been 99.9% sure of since July,
yeah,
which is, okay, Bill O'Brien is calling the shots. Now, in terms of Bill O'Brien gaining the rubber stamp of approval from Cal McNair, I think perhaps this was an auditioning period, even if it was kind of Bill O'Brien's idea for it to be an auditioning period. Because in New England, this is the way things work.
Mm-hmm.
Guys in New England often perform their duty or their role for a year or more before they're actually named that person. Brian Flores wasn't officially named the defensive coordinator right.
That's a good point.
Right away. Matt Patricia before him wasn't named the defensive coordinator right away, even though he was acting in that role. You know, Scott Pioli, when he was the general manager, was never actually named the general manager of the team.
That's right.
They like keeping things kind of under wraps. Partly, I think, just to be able to stick and move and to have a certain aura of mystery, but then also just to have this culture of, hey, prove it. You're not going to earn the title until you prove it. So, and again, maybe that was O'Brien/Easterby's role, O'Brien/Easterby's idea, but it was still what they had to prove to Cal. I think the more notable part of all this is that Jack Easterby, whose role has always been kind of hazy, is now firmly cemented as, okay, yeah, he is definitely 100% the right-hand man. This is a guy who was a team chaplain for Kansas City less than a decade ago, and now he's risen to really either the second highest or co-highest position in a football franchise as one of the chief decision makers.
Do you remember what we were saying about Jack Easter being the preseason? That it basically felt like he was just a dude walking around giving pep talks to everybody in the building, right?
Which is what he was in New England. He was a team character coach.
And that's what he was doing. It felt like out of practice, you'd see Easterby kind of walking around and talking to people and interacting with a lot of people. And then come to find out now that he has very, very deftly, I feel like, at least outsider looking in, I don't begrudge him in any way for this. He's used that entry, and everybody's got different entries into the job that they got, right? Yeah. If you don't have a conventional way to get to being a football ops guy, his way to get to it was through being a chaplain and a character coach, and along the way, it turns out the guy knows some things about football, and he's now on football ops.
And even though Ian Rappaport, in one of his articles last year, when Breer wrote, his friends will tell you he's not a hatchet man about Easterby. He sure feels a lot like a hatchet man. A whole lot of people have lost their jobs.
We didn't get to that. Let's get to that in the next segment.
My business plan is to go to Radio Row, like hawking some product, but alter my Wikipedia page right before I go to where it says I was 7-time All-Pro, 2-time Super Bowl champion, something like that. Because what happens is, somebody will say, a publicist will say, hey, do you want to have Seth Payne on? And they're like, hold on a second, who's Seth Payne? And they'll look at it and they'll say, oh, he actually played in 2 of these things. Then we'll ask him his experience about that.
And just ride it out until the Wikipedia people find out that it's a lie?
Just ride it out until I've sold all of my concussion tonic or whatever I call it. Yeah.
It's a good plan.
Dr. Copeland Payne's concussion water, we go.
It's Wikipedia. It's not perjury or anything. It's the internet. It's the wild, wild west.
We did it one year. I was at Radio Row, and I went on with the Tennessee guys with my new frenemy. What's his name from Tennessee? The football writer there.
Oh, Kuharski.
Paul Kuharski.
Yeah.
We're frenemies. We're more friends than anything, but I had an issue with one thing that he wrote about the Astros. Well, I went at him he came at me on Twitter, and I had to shut him down quickly.
Okay, good for you.
That's the only time we've ever had any kind of negative exchange.
Okay.
But the Astros will anger me. Yeah. So anyway, I was on with them, I'll get angry defending the Astros.
Right.
I was on with them, and I just joked with the listeners, like, you guys should go on and edit my Wikipedia. And within 10 minutes, they went too far. I wanted it to be kind of an achievable, a little lie that somebody might not realize. Like, oh, I didn't know that about something.
Were all the lies football related?
It turned into...
Did they give you a sex tape or anything?
No. It was mostly just that I was named Defensive Rookie of the Year. I was a 10-time All-Pro. All this stuff that was definitely a lie. I wanted them to just tweak it a little bit.
Right.
Just add a little bit of glory to it.
It would have been great if just in that little window where that stuff was up there, you had some nerd, like I am sometimes, I get into these little, these internet wormholes or whatever that happen to stumble across your page for some reason. Like, how is this guy not in the Hall of Fame?
You write an article about it.
He's a 10-time All-Pro. Right. Here's the omission that's the real tragic omission in the Hall of Fame.
The bigger topics generally get edited out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
You can go on to like Seth Payne's Wikipedia page and change it, and it's going to be a while before somebody reports it. You know?
My favorite Wikipedia change, and we're going to get into the changes the Texans made to their organization yesterday in just a second. My favorite one is when people go into a team's Wikipedia page and change the owner to the name of a player that just had a dominant performance.
Right.
Like when James Harden scored 60 against the Knicks, somebody goes into the Wikipedia page for the New York Knicks, puts owner James Harden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are good.
That's always
you
got to
screen cap that quickly.
Yeah.
You can't sit around admiring your handiwork.
You can't.
You got to take that trophy right quick.
The Wikipedia police.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yesterday, and we'll get to Dusty Baker here in this segment as well. We got a nice long segment for you here. So yesterday, the Texans, in addition to naming Bill O'Brien officially the general manager, Jack Easterby officially the executive vice president in charge of football operations, they made some more changes to the organization. These are changes that again, they're with a lot of folks who people probably don't know. I'll be honest with you. Most of the folks that were part of this purge yesterday, well, I don't know who they are other than your former teammate, J.J. Moses,
right,
who might be the nicest person on the face of God's green earth.
I mean, one of the nicest people and then also one of the most positive people I've ever met.
He's incredibly
and
positive.
And like a genuinely awesome, positive person who did take the player engagement program for the Texans.
And that was his title, right? Director of Player
Engagement? Yeah. So that's he runs a lot of programs for, you know, getting guys to go back and finish their degrees. Just kind of some of the player improvement things and programs, a lot of the stuff they do, the educational seminars. He was hired 2 years ago officially in that role, and he'd done a lot of work with the team before that, but he was hired officially in 2 years ago, and they were below average, not awful, but below average in terms of how many players actually utilize the services. This past year, they were the number one in terms of player engagement. That's not just like some popularity contest. It was that's an objective measure that they use based on how many people are utilizing the program, feedback from the players, all that stuff. And the Texans were the number one. So this was, to put it simply, far outpacing any other objective measure on the Texans last year.
Right.
The offense, which was about 20th in DVOA, the defense, which was near dead last. Look, you made changes there, but yeah, J.J. Moses, who, if anything, I would guess the biggest issue with J.J. Moses would have been one of these things where O'Brien either has somebody else in mind that he wants to bring in, or it was just that J.J. was too positive. Like, I don't know. Like, that somehow maybe J.J. was in there actually trying to get people going on a Monday, where O'Brien wants it to feel like a morgue on a Monday. I have no idea. But I could see that sometimes old school coaches like Bill O'Brien or guys that are kind of wannabe old school guys, they don't like it when people are actually mentally healthy and getting ready for the next opponent.
Right.
They want them to be depressed for at least a good 48
hours.
Yeah,
the people
before.
That point out that the sun came up today are bad people.
I always heard stories about these guys, some of these coaches like Pete Carroll and Jeff Fisher, where they would talk about the 24-hour rule and they would genuinely mean it. That, hey, by the time you show up for work tomorrow, we're ready to go. We're on to next week. We just got to be ready, and there'd be like kind of a fun, loose environment. I never played for a coach like that.
Okay, so
but they do exist.
So what you're saying is that they have the rule that you come in and you come in with the outlook that maybe a J.J. Moses might have had, whereas there are a lot of coaches out there that feel like part of the process of losing is wallowing in the losing
right.
for a little while.
Because
you want it to hurt?
And somebody explained this to me, because I used to be that guy too. I used to feel that it was very important to let the world know like how upset you are, because, hey, I'm a big, tough football player, right? And I care.
I think a lot of fans kind of want...
And the fans
I think there are a lot of fans that feel that
which
way.
Which is fine. That's like on the field after the game. I totally get that. Yeah. And you are personally distraught about
right.
it. But I had a guy that actually works with a lot of tennis players and golfers back in Orlando. I could remember that. I think it's James Lair. He's a sports psychologist. He broke it down to me when I was about in my fourth year in the league. And he said, you know, a lot of the tantrums that people throw, a lot of just acting like showing the world, it's really just your own insecurity needing to show the rest of the world like how much you care.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, look at me. Look at me. Look at how serious I take it. When it's not necessarily actually the most productive way to get moving
right.
on into the next week. Likewise, same thing with, you know, we talk about keeping an even keel. Enjoying the victory a little too much and getting too a little high on the hog, then there can be a refractory period from that. Anyway, it was just weird that JJ did so well with the program and then just got axed for
named it. Literally the best player engagement program in the league.
Yeah, and I know...
Was he brought in by Brian Gain?
He was brought in by Brian Gain, and that was Brian Gain's goal, was to be the number one player engagement. That was one of his goals, was to be number one in terms of player engagement, and then JJ wasn't. The interesting thing is that JJ kind of had the role in a lot of respects that Jack Easterby had with the Patriots.
That's a good
supposed
point.
To be a guy that's helping out. I do wonder, and I brought this up at the time, if Easterby thinks that guys are going to trust him, well, he's also the guy that's making all the personnel decisions and everything, to come and talk to Easterby about your personal problems and everything. then they must want a lot of dumbasses on their team, because that's not the guy. I'm not going to go to Charlie Casserly and be like, hey, Charlie, here's everything that's wrong in my life right now. Can you help me fix it?
Here's what's distracting me from the one singular thing you want me to be, which is a good football player.
Yeah, I mean, it's just there's a conflict of interest there. Yeah, yeah. But maybe, whatever. I don't know. I'm very personally biased. Like, honestly, JJ's one of these people that when you first meet him, you're like, oh, he can't actually be this positive, can he? Well, yeah, he can. And that's how he made it in the NFL as a 5'6" kick returner.
Is it a shock that the dude that was screaming down a fan on the way back under the tunnel fired J.J. Moses? Like, when you think about J.J. Moses, it's the polar opposite. Like, personality-wise, it's the it is the polar opposite of the guy who is now, we can say, is running things now. Bill O'Brien, the head coach and the general manager.
JJ was 5'6". I would imagine he still is 5'6". But as a player, he was 5'6". He was the shortest player in the NFL at one point.
Yeah, he's a great story.
And he's one of these guys. He's just very, very devoutly religious and everything. And but like, look, these things happen. It's just a matter of, all right, so it's one more position they have to replace. And typically what would happen is, okay, Bill O'Brien probably has a lot of guys in the organization still that were brought in by Rick Smith or Brian Gain, and O'Brien wants his own guy in there. Jack Easterby wants his own guy in there. Like, whatever cult Jack Easterby wants to create, then he's going to bring his own cult leader in for that.
I'm willing to wait and see what all these moves net. Like, some of it is these names of all these people. It's the quantity of the people, and people go, wow, look at all these people who are getting fired. And then you take a step back and you ask yourself, do I really know what these people were even doing in the building over there?
Yeah.
You know, like, they're making all these decisions, and I don't know what the job description or how good these people, like the administrative people on the scouting side. I think it's, you know, I hate that people are losing their jobs. I don't know what these people's jobs were. So for me to sit here and go, I can't believe so-and-so got fired, when I'd never heard their name before yesterday. Like, I do think that O'Brien's, the feelings about O'Brien, and more O'Brien than Easterby, the feelings about O'Brien, the news yesterday that he is officially the general manager, which we all knew, and yet the designation that provides clarity got everybody all worked up. I'm just as nervous now, even them giving him the title doesn't change my opinion about the direction of the team. I've been nervous since the season ended about the direction of the team. That didn't change it yesterday. It just validates something we already knew. I think when you see a bunch of people get fired like this, Seth, and it's O'Brien who's at the top of the thing, it doesn't matter who they could be firing popcorn vendors. They'd be like, why are they firing this popcorn vendor?
I wonder too, you know, like Amber Davies was let go too. And she's, I want to say she's been there. I get confused sometimes with front office staff, but she's an administrative assistant.
Right.
I'm always curious when those names hit the news. I don't know whether to feel bad or good for Amber Davies, but every exchange I've ever had, whether it's been very pleasant,
sure,
and she's been there a long, long time. It feels strange to put the name of an administrative assistant out there in the news.
You know what it feels like, Seth? This is what it feels like. Because you brought up a great point earlier in the hour, which is the way the Patriots had done things for years is that somebody gets the power to do things, or somebody gets more power, and then they have to prove to management, to the decision makers, that they are using, that they're executing this new job responsibility they have in a positive fashion, that they're moving the organization in the right way. And you can debate whether or not you think that's the case with Bill O'Brien as a general manager. The fact of the matter is, the guy who's making the decision, Cal McNair, feels that the organization is moving in that direction. So now, maybe, he's got the title, he's got the power, he now has the confidence of the owner, whether you feel it's justified or not, and I'm guessing a majority of the people don't. And as I said, I am nervous about it too. But the bottom line is, the person whose opinion matters is Cal McNair's. He has given Bill O'Brien that power. And this feels like, you know what it feels like, Seth? It feels like that one-year period that you're talking about is over. And now it's like, okay, guys, go ahead and do what you want to do.
Right, yeah.
And there's a whole lot of people at every level in the organization that get moved out so they can move new people in.
Yeah, and I guess that's where the Jack Easterby scenario is by far the most curious development maybe that I've ever heard of in the NFL. Like, this is a guy that was a team chaplain and was brought in to work with players, and that's what he was doing in New England, although he was working the same hours as coaches and scouts. And now he's going to be taking on a whole bunch of different roles, obviously, including personnel and his oversight over personnel, however that's divvied up.
Yeah, I think in conjunction with this title designation,
Jack
Easterby needs to speak. Jack Easterby needs to be a face that the fans can see now. He's not just some dude behind the scenes. He's Bill O'Brien's right-hand man. Even if it's a press conference where we just learn more about the guy, you have a
lot
of people.
Do you think he was brought in for this specific job title?
I have no idea.
Or is this?
Bill O'Brien was brought in to be a general manager someday.
Right, did Bill O'Brien bring Jack Easterby in with this in mind, or did Jack Easterby finagle his way into this job?
Yeah,
there's a very Rasputin feel about Jack Easterby.
Yeah,
he's a holy man that all of a sudden finds himself as a trusted advisor to powerful people, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden starts perhaps actually calling the shots. And like, how does that happen? Is that because he was identified as it, or is it because he's a really good pep talk guy?
Yeah.
This is what I fear out of coaches and team executives. Sometimes guys who are great at giving pep talks get jobs that they don't deserve because they're really good at giving a pep talk to an owner. An owner loves feeling, just to speak in general, not Cal McNair specifically, yeah. but there are owners who really just want to feel like, oh yeah, this is what I've seen in the movies. This is what a real football coach or real general manager is like. Hell yeah, let's go for it.
Or it's like Pavlov's dogs. You feel, yeah. when that guy is around you and he's giving you a pep talk, how do you feel? You feel good. Seth, it's the endorphins. You know what I mean? Like, you know what? This guy is making me feel pretty good about the direction of things and very positive. It's like when people see likes on Facebook for their posts. It gives them the endorphins, man.
And it's not even just owners. I saw Gary Moeller pep talk his way into a defensive coordinator position. I was playing with the Jaguars. Gary Moeller, the old University of Michigan coach, had been in the NFL for a couple years coaching linebackers after he just, you know, got a little too drunk at a restaurant That's one right. night and then drove home at 7 miles an hour, right. and the cops noticed. I feel like he should get some credit for being
at least it was 7 miles an hour, not 97.
Cautious about it, right? So, Gary, he got
kids
this,
don't drink and drive.
Moeller got this job. He got this job as defensive coordinator, and I would say a week into him being the defensive coordinator, it was very obvious that he had just given Tom Coughlin a really good pep talk about playing physical football, because that guy did not know hardly anything at all about like NFL defense. Right. It was astounding how little he knew as a defensive coordinator. And yet he talked Tom Coughlin, a very bright individual. He talked to him about, oh, we're going to get in there and we're going to bash heads and we're going to be the best team out there. O'Brien went for it. Coughlin went for it. I feel like Jack Easterby is like the more pleasant version of that.
They're salespeople.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They're salespeople and they're selling themselves. And that's why if we're saying anything, if Jack Easterby were to listen right now and he think that you and I are saying anything that's unfair about him or inaccurate about the way he's gone about getting this position, that's why we need to hear from him. He's the mystery man.
Yeah,
this is
I'm not even reporting anything. I'm just saying this is how it feels.
Right.
This guy shows up out of nowhere as a character coach in New England to now all of a sudden he's sitting beside the dictator, O'Brien. It's really weird. Yeah. It's a strange scenario.
Yeah.
It's super goofy, man.
Yeah.
And so, yes, as a Texans fan, I'm a little bit nervous about it, that this is the guy that's calling the show. And that also, look, this is post-hoc reasoning, but Easterby shows up and heads start to roll.
Yeah.
All these people that have been in football forever are losing their jobs, which is fine. Look, the team needs to improve. Definition of insanity, all that crap. But how exactly has Easterby earned the right to do this? I'm curious.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's a crazy scenario.
It is a crazy scenario. That's why I think the next step in this whole thing is Jack Easterby should do a press conference. I really feel it's appropriate for him to do an interview or speak to the media so people can learn more about who he is.
Now, to be clear, when I make the Rasputin comparison, it's not complete and total. Rasputin was into some funky stuff.
Yeah.
It was like all like weird, weird, crazy adult themed parties and stuff like
right,
that. Yeah.
Right.
That was a whole different deal.
You're not putting that
on
Easter.
That was Russia. And he was a wandering mystic. He was just
like a gypsy.
No, not a gypsy, because a gypsy, you know, gypsies are actually like communities and everything.
Yeah.
He was just a wandering mystic that would just go and, you know, tell people spiritual truths.
Find his way into power.
And maybe give you a shoulder rub, and then whatever leads to whatever.
Next thing, you're running football ops.
Yada,
yada, yada, you're running football ops. So the other big news yesterday, which may have been a misfire, we'll see, is Dusty Baker as the next Astros manager. To be clear, if you're getting into your car, he is not the manager of the Astros today. It was reported yesterday by Bob Nightingale of USA Today, and also he is a radio.com MLB insider. He was on with John and Landry yesterday, right after the news broke. Nightingale reported the Houston Astros are about to choose Dusty Baker to be their next manager, according to a person familiar with the hiring, which can be a lot of people. The tone of Bob Nightingale's article would seem to indicate that it's somebody from the Dusty Baker side of all this.
It was funny. He's like, hey, did he know a bunch of people that were involved in the drug scandals in the 80s? Of course he did. Hey, did he owe $4 million to the IRS? Sure, but there was an explanation. This is the guy.
Yeah.
It was weird. He was trying his best to be even-handed, but very much every conclusion was that, yeah, Dusty Baker is definitely the guy. And he also included, this would be the first good move the Astros organization has made. He didn't specify a timeline on that. He just said that this is the first day. Okay, oh, sorry, I didn't realize they'd been such a mess all low these past 5 years.
Right, this report of the Astros hiring a manager includes sentences like, this organization finally did something right.
Yeah.
Baker is the ideal man to get them through perhaps the most tumultuous time an entire organization will face since the Black Sox scandal in 1919. Fans will taunt them every time they step to the plate, hearing chants of cheater, cheater, cheater. It will be relentless. Astros owner Jim Crane, realizing what lies ahead, had to find the man that would be best to insulate the clubhouse from the outside noise and threats, keeping them together. He chose Baker.
Boom.
Yeah. Well, and to be clear, we don't know that he's chosen Baker.
Right, we don't.
There are plenty of reports. There are more reports that they have not chosen Baker yet, and they're coming and actual reports coming from people who would know these things. They have not settled on Dusty Baker.
That's why
yet.
It feels a whole lot like this feels like the kind of thing that a job prospect might have gotten some very positive feedback from the hiring organization, but maybe a contract hasn't been completely agreed upon.
And he got on the phone and called somebody whose name is, I don't know, hypothetically, Bob.
Bob Dayengale.
And he said, hey, Bob Dayengale.
Yeah.
Guess what?
They've chosen me.
It's Dusty Baker.
It's been reported as he was chosen. It didn't say hired.
Yeah.
So perhaps he was chosen, and yet there's this minor detail of the contract.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So it's because one side would say, hey, Dusty, you've been fired 4 times. You're 70 years old. Look, we're in the catbird seat here. And Dusty Baker will say, excuse me? I've got a prestigious career, and though I would like to get a World Series ring, this is not an easy situation I'm stepping into.
There are some numbers related to Dusty in the postseason that I think are going to scare some Astro fans.
Mm-hmm.
He's lost 10 straight closeout games of series. Not elimination games, but closeout games. There have been series where his team has been ahead, significantly ahead. He is 0-10 in his last 10 attempts at closing out a series.
A lot of people will diminish how much of an effect a manager has anymore in baseball. I would submit to you, let's think back to, okay, A.J. Hinch's decisions in Game 7.
Right.
Or let's go back and think back to when the Astros won against the Dodgers, and Yu Darvish stayed in seemingly forever. It felt like Yu Darvish pitched 18 innings that night, long after he should have been pulled. Managerial decisions matter in finite moments, and that's where people get a little bit nervous about Dusty Baker. Also, one of the other concerns about him is that he had a reputation of kind of pitching pitchers into the dirt. And 125 count pitch counts and whatnot.
That was a big thing when he was with the Cubs early on with Mark Pryor and Kerry Wood. He ruined those guys.
Yeah, so I most people say, okay, he's gotten over that. He's figured it out. The only thing I would worry about there is with Lance McCullers, except Lance is represented by Boris. Boris does not let Tommy John guys get abused. He's proven that.
I had a buddy who was a Cubs fan, still is a Cubs fan, but was a Cubs fan in a season ticket holder when Dusty was coaching the Cubs. And he actually sent me an article yesterday about Dusty's use of pitchers in his last couple stops compared to when he was with the Cubs. That doesn't concern me anymore. Like, Dusty's overuse of pitchers is not a major concern to me, because you're right. Those are now in 2019, those are organizational decisions with certain guys. Those are things where Dusty's going to be handed an edict from upper management to say, hey, look, this is how you're going to use this guy. He's coming back from Tommy John.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear.
We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.